When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's Monday, April 26th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer. Hoynesy, the Indians salvaged a game on Sunday in a four-game series with the Yankees. After losing leads in each of the first three games, they finally mounted a comeback against the Yankees on Sunday. Right when you thought everything was going to hell with a three-run deficit, Tristan McKenzie had given up a couple of home runs. The Indians come back on the heels of four consecutive base hits. I believe it was the sixth inning. It was the first time they had four hits in a row since 2019, and the offense looked good, and then Framil Reyes steps up and hits a three-run bomb, and all of a sudden they take the lead and go on to win the game.
Yeah, that was the fourth inning, Joe, where they scored four. And, the Yankees had just taken a 3-0 lead in the top of the fourth, and they finally responded. After taking those, like you said, the first three games, especially the first two games, taking a 3-0 lead in the first inning and then watching the Yankees just, come back and just pass them in each game. They finally responded, came back on the Yankees and then added a run in the fifth, two in the sixth, and they had a 7-3 win. And that's how teams usually win games. You don't score once, you keep adding on, and it was a good sign, perhaps.
Right. That's every game in that series up until that point. The Indians had a lead, but then just never really sort of put their foot on the Yankees' throat and just kept it there. Never put the hammer down, never added on runs. In Sunday's game, they seemed to respond to something and just did that. And really, off the top, it was the play of Framil Reyes. He inspired this comeback at the plate with his home run, but then also with his hustle.
Yeah, he gets a single in the second inning, then steals his first base of his career. I mean, he was like, he looked like Flash out there. Mm-hmm. He was like Kenny Lofton, a larger version of Kenny Lofton.
Wow. Hoynesy comparing Framil Reyes to Kenny Lofton. Go on.
And then in the fourth, Hernandez and Ramirez, single hit consecutive singles. Eddie Rosario sends a radar ball through the middle of the Yankee shifts to get him on the board. And, Reyes, finally found a way to hit one over the 6-7 Aaron Judge. You got to hit it like so it's 9-7 or so 9 feet 7 inches so he can't jump up and get it.
Right. How in watching that live, how many of us were sitting there going, oh, Judge is going to catch this. It's going to be another one of those, wall scraper or whatever, and Judge is going to go up and get this, continuing the Indians' frustration. And this ball just barely eluded his glove. And when that happened, you knew something good was going to happen, at least, because, the way the Indians' bullpen set up, Sam Henches came in, threw an inning and a third strong. Cal Quantrill came in, got a big out. Just you know, a total team effort beyond Franmil, but obviously it started with him. Franmil Reyes came into this series against the Yankees without a stolen base in his career and without a triple in his career. He leaves with two triples and a steal. He had never even attempted a stolen base. That's how like out of left field this was. His first even attempt at a stolen base, and he's successful because Gary Sanchez is quite possibly the worst catcher in baseball.
And tell me how that's set up, Joe. You wrote about it today, and he had some help from Sandy Alomar, huh?
Yeah, and that was the thing. He said even that if you 314 games and he'd never even attempted a stolen base, but he prepared like he was a base stealer. He talked to Sandy Alomar. He's up on and he knows, hey, maybe Jameson Taillon might be a little slow to the plate, 1.7, 1.5 to the plate. Gary Sanchez, not the best defensive catcher. So Sandy Alomar is really sort of like the cheat code over there at first base for these base stealers. He really is. Sandy Alomar has forgotten more about base stealing than the rest of us will ever know. And Franmil used that to his advantage. He said in spring training, Sandy told him, go, go, you got this guy a couple of times. And he stole a couple of bases in spring training. So I guess we should have seen this coming, right?
Yeah, this is, I don't think anyone saw this coming. I didn't. I mean, and he can move for a big guy. You know?
Well, once you get 6'5", 260 pounds moving, it momentum is going to take over. That's just physics. He can get it going in a hurry. The only thing, and as fun as it is to watch him run the bases, and when that ball hit off the wall in center field, it was like, oh boy, here we go. You know, we're watching. The only concern and worry I have is, you know, you want Franmil Reyes in the lineup every day. You don't want him, you know, pulling a hammy or, you know, busting up a knee, sliding into a base. You know, more power to him if he's going to do it, but just make sure you do it and you're healthy and you're safe when you do, because the Indians need his bat in the lineup, especially at home.
Yeah, one extra base is not worth, you know, a 10-day trip to the injured list, or maybe even longer with a hamstring injury. But you know, Joey starts the six with that triple you were talking about, and then Jordan Luplo, who's had, you know, just keeps hitting, keeps swinging, mm-hmm. keeps getting at bats against righties and lefties. He doubles him home, and you know, another insurance run.
And we had an Austin Hedges RBI base hit.
Yeah,
you know,
did they stop the game? Did they stop the game and give him the ball?
No, but as soon as Hedges hit the ball, the clouds went away and the sun beat down on the field. People started applauding. I thought they were applauding the sunshine. They were applauding Hedges getting his first hit or his second hit of the season. But seriously, Hedges gets the RBI base hit, and it's as if the sun shone down on the Indians. That was how that unfolded on Sunday. Just to mention one more time, Ray is hitting at home. He is on an unbelievable tear right now. He has base hits in every single home game for all but one home game for the Indians. I think he was held hitless on Saturday, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Gerrit Cole will kind of do that to you, won't he?
Yeah, he took an 0-for-3 Saturday against Cole.
But he was 3-for-3 on Sunday, and in the series, in his last seven games, I think he's batting over .350, and his home slugging percentage, his home OPS, is up over 1,300, which is out of this world right now. Franmil Reyes hitting at home, I would make appointment to see every at bat you can, because something good's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. And that is such a welcome, you know, so welcome for the Indians, because he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. They've been struggling to score runs. And, you know, he's on one of those hot streaks, and hopefully he can hold it for a while and, you know, just help the Indians get this offense turned around.
There's never been a better time to register for Indian Subtext. Get all your Cleveland Indians news with updates from Cleveland.com reporters Paul Hoynes and Joe Noga. Get on board now by going to joinsubtext.com/Cleveland Indians. Our subscriber-based service gives you the latest news, analysis, and more from the Indians. For $3.99 a month, you get everything we're hearing from the team and the first word before things are announced. We text you big breaking news directly to your phone, even before it's up on Cleveland.com. And you can text us directly with your questions and opinions on everything from the team's name to that day's lineup. And it's the only way to get your questions and comments on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. Why sign up? Hear from one of our subscribers.
I'm Jeff Heinerson. I grew up there in Milan, Ohio, but I now live out in Idaho. I've been here for 40 years, and my son was born and raised here, and I got him as a birthday present your subtext. And I wanted to thank Paul for sending him a birthday greeting and to tell you that he is really enjoying the subtext. He's not from Ohio, but because he grew up with me, he's hardcore Indian fan. So thanks again.
Jeff and all of our Indian subtext subscribers agree. There's a lot going on with the Indians, and the best way to keep up is with Indian subtext. Go to joinsubtext.com/Cleveland Indians, or better yet, text Hoynesy at 216-208-4346. Again, that's 216-208-4346. We look forward to hearing from you on Indian subtext. Okay, now the big story, coming up this week, the Twins come to town. I guess the Twins sort of limp into town. They're tied with the Indians in as far as number of wins go in the standings. Not where the Twins expected to be at this point of the season, I don't think. I think everybody kind of expected them to be contending for the top of the division. Right now, that's Kansas City and their offense, which is going crazy. But, you know, the Twins come in. They're struggling with some COVID issues. They've had injuries and guys like Kenta Maeda not necessarily performing to the level that we expected them from last year. What do we expect this week as the Twins come in for a three-game series to open up the week?
Yeah, this is another kind of get well series for the Indians. Either the Twins get well or the Indians get well. A three-game set. The Twins got their three horses going: Barrios, Maeda, and J.A. Happ, who's coming off a near no-hitter against the Pirates. The Indians are countering with Plesac, Savali, and Logan Allen. Plesac and Allen have struggled. Savali has been rock steady there. So it's going to, and they've both been struggling, obviously. The Twins, I think, have lost eight of their or nine of their last 11, and the Indians, have been up and down, and they both have been struggling while Kansas City has been taken off in the AL Central. They've got a four-game lead over the Indians already, and right. I didn't even see that happening. I mean, you get wrapped up in the Indians so much that the Kansas City has just kept winning.
Right, and the Indians will go to Kansas City next week, so there could be some changes there, hopefully, in the standings by then. But the struggles for the Twins really did coincide with the COVID issues and the injury to Byron Buxton, who was really carrying their offense early on the first couple of weeks. Buxton being out really hurt them. But this is still a dangerous lineup. This is still a group of guys that can hit the ball out of the park. But now the Indians have one of their own, playing at Progressive Field in Eddie Rosario, who every time you bring up the Twins and what happened between Eddie Rosario and the Twins getting non-tendered and having him come, sign the free agent deal over here. He just sort of blows it off. He seems to think, oh, it's not a big deal. You got to think that Eddie Rosario wants this series bad.
Yeah, I would think, he was a big part of that offense. He came up with them. They drafted him, they signed him, they developed him. He was part of those two division winning teams, last year and the year before with the Twins. And then he kind of got, when they were cutting, they were counting their, you know, the bean counters kind of, you know, wanted the payroll at a certain number, and Eddie was the odd guy out. So, you know, I would, it's going to be fun to watch to see how he performs. And I really like the way what we've seen out of Rosario, especially with runners in scoring positions, Joe.
Yeah, he's always been a guy who puts the bat on the ball as much as possible, and puts balls in play that you don't think he should actually have really hit, like a ball be a foot outside the strike zone or, you know, in the other batter's box, and he'll get it in play, or he'll, you know, move a runner along. We saw that, like you say, you described his RBI hit yesterday. It really did have eyes. It found the hole up the middle. But really, what do you think of Eddie sitting in the number four spot in the order, the cleanup spot, as opposed to Reyes? Do you think, you know, Reyes might, or do you think Eddie might benefit by moving back or up or down in that spot?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at that, and Terry Francona kind of flip flops those guys, and I'm not sure if it's a, you know, depends on the pitcher, the matchup.
He does it against lefties.
Yeah, and so it's interesting how they use them. So, you know, I don't think you lose much either way, really. I mean, maybe you went by hitting Reyes fifth, you take a little pressure off him. You know, he cuts down his swing. He's not, you know, he doesn't think he's got to hit the ball out of the park every time up. And Rosario is just really, really, he really changes his whole approach when guys are in scoring position. He, you know, he's not, you know, he was talking about it Saturday night after he drove in the Indians' only run against Cole, and said, you know, the pressure is all on the hitter, on the pitcher in those situations. At least that's how he thinks about it. So he just kind of, you know, takes a deep breath and just tries to give what the pitcher get, you know, hit what the pitcher gives him. So he knows he doesn't have to hit the ball out of the park. I think he's got 12 RBIs. You know, four of them have come on two home runs. The rest, you know, he's hit some ground balls. He's hit some singles. You know, that's how he gets the runs in. And to me, it reminds me of the one guy it reminds me of is Juan Gonzalez. And Gonzalez was like a power hitter, obviously, mm-hmm. You know, two-time MVP. But Gonzalez would take the easy RBI. If there was a guy on third base and they're playing the infield back, he would just hit a ground ball to second base. And that's right. That one year when he had 120 RBIs, or maybe it was 140 RBIs for the Indians in 2000, 2001. That's what he did. And, you know, so there's a lesson there. And I think Rosario, you know, has kind of picked up on that.
Yeah. And it's funny to compare Juan Gonzalez, who, you know, is this hulking, massive bodybuilder type, to Eddie, who's got, you know, sort of an average size frame and build, but he still generates that power. I would like to start seeing a little bit more pop out of Eddie Rosario, though. That's the only thing. Putting the ball in play, driving in runs is great, but let's see him drive the ball someplace. And I think once the weather warms up, I think you're really going to see the ball jump off of Eddie Rosario's bat, especially in Cleveland, where he just enjoys hitting. So.
Yeah, and you know he's better than a two. He's hitting .216. I mean, that's you know, you're not gonna have. I think you're not. He's not gonna be hitting .216. You know, come the All-Star break or the end of the season.
Right. All right. Well, another guy that the Indians need to get going here is Zach Plesac, who starts tonight. Plesac against the Twins. Last couple of outings have been really rough. You know, he lost the game in which both times he was matched up, I think, against Carlos Rodon in his last two starts. So things haven't gone, you know, exceptionally well in terms of matchups for him. But, you know, Plesac needs to – he's nothing physical. There's nothing with his stuff or his mechanics. It's just everything between the ears and executing his pitches.
Yeah, his last two starts against the White Sox, he's given up like 12 earned runs, Joe. And, you know, he's, I think he's pitched 5 2/3 innings. You know, that's not the Zach Plesac that we've seen the last 2 years. So I think he's, you know, the results the last time out when he faced Rodon and the White Sox, he said he felt better than the results on his pitching line. And Well, I hope he did.
That's good.
The pitching line was not good. So
there's a two-word phrase that I would use to describe the pitching line, and I hope you don't want to feel that way. So anyways.
You know, and he's not walking anybody, Joe. He hasn't walked anybody in those two starts. That means he's throwing a lot of strikes, I think. And, you know, I think it's, like you said, it's a matter of confidence. It's a matter of, you know, stringing some outs together and just avoiding that big inning that has hurt him.
All right. Well, a guy that avoided a big inning yesterday, Madison Bumgarner for the Arizona Diamondbacks in a seven inning doubleheader game against the Atlanta Braves, threw a no hitter, but it's not a no hitter because the Elias Sports Bureau is sticking to what Faye Vincent said back in 1991 as the commissioner ruled that a no hitter to be official has to go nine innings. Your pitcher has to go nine innings. Madison Bumgarner pitched seven innings. The rules said Madison Bumgarner, you know, as they are currently set up because of the COVID protocols and Commissioner Rob Manfred, they weren't going to give Madison Bumgarner a chance to go nine innings yesterday. He got seven innings and he was no hit perfect through them. So what is it, a no hitter? Do you think Madison Bumgarner deserves a no hitter to his credit?
Yeah, I think it's a no hitter, Joe. I mean, he could only throw seven innings. I mean, unless, I guess it went into extra innings, right? I mean,
right.
Or, you know, it was an extra inning game, but, you know, seven inning limit. He pitched seven innings, no hits. So it's a no hitter. And I mean, they're not taking away the hits the guys, you know, his teammates got to help him, you know, win that game. Those are still hits. Those count as hits. So, you know, I think in Madison Bumgarner's mind, I think he knows he threw a no hitter, maybe an asterisk by it, but you know, a no hitter is a no hitter. I mean, if you pitch as well as you can within the limits of the rules, that's what you get.
Yeah, and you know, for Madison Bumgarner, who, you know, had struggled the last couple of years, he hasn't been very good. This came as some sort of a surprise to hear that he had gone out there and thrown a no hitter. Or not allowed a hit through seven innings, I guess. Can't describe it as a no hitter. It's just weird. I mean, other levels of baseball, you play seven inning games, you know, do you count those as no hitters? I guess it's only in Major League Baseball that they have the rule that says a nine inning game is required for a no hitter. I don't know. I can't even bring myself to argue the other side with you just to play devil's advocate. Because the guy went, he pitched all the innings they let him pitch, and he didn't give up a hit. It's a no-hitter.
Yeah, I mean, and what if he did go into extra innings and it went nine innings and it was a no-hitter? Is it a no-hitter then? I don't know. You know, maybe, you know, it is a no-hitter then.
A couple of years ago, Carlos Carrasco pitched a five-inning shutout. You know, why is that a shutout, but a no-hitter is not a no-hitter? Carlos Carrasco got credit for he pitched five innings and the game got called by rain. And it was a shutout. He didn't give up a run. Complete game shutout. Well, I don't understand the difference between the two rules. So,
yeah. And, you know, this happened. Faye Vincent changed these rules back in the 90s when he was commissioner and saying, you know, that there can't be an eight-inning no-hitter. You had to pitch at least nine innings. And, you know, so that's where we're at. But in the Hall of Fame, they keep those eight-inning no-hitters. They keep a record of them. So maybe, you know, Madison Bumgarner's seven inning no hitter will be recorded somewhere in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, you know what? Madison Bumgarner gets to keep the ball from a seven inning game. I'm going to put that ball on my mantle and say, here's my no hitter ball. It's not like it's whatever you believe. So I guess, you know, go for it. I don't know. Lindsay, you ever pitch a no hitter? You ever?
God, no, I never pitched.
I pitched a shutout in a playoff softball game once.
All right.
No lie. A slow pitch softball game. The other team didn't score a run. However, I think it was kind of handicapped because I noticed that a lot of the guys came in from the parking lot and their eyes were kind of bloodshot and there was a funny kind of smoky smell going on there. So I think I had a little bit of an advantage that day because they might have been celebrating in the parking lot a little too much.
There was no drug testing in the.
No, there was not, and it wouldn't have been a performance enhancer anyways. It would have been an inhibitor. But yeah, I did pitch a shutout in softball, which is kind of hard when
that's hard to do. You know, yeah,
I'm not throwing 90. So, all right, Hoynesy, we'll be back again later on this week as the Indians and Twins continue their series, and we'll talk to you again here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe.